You're tuned to Perspectives, and this is the book club on Perspectives. And join us today is New York Times bestselling author Diane Chamberlain. Her latest book is called The Dream Daughter. Diane, thank you so much for being with us here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, as I mentioned, this is your current book, The Dream Daughter, but you have, I think, 26 other books. Let me talk a little bit about yourself. You are the New York Times bestselling author, which I already mentioned, of more than 20 novels. You live in North Carolina with your partner, photographer John Pagliocca, and her
pretty good
Sheltie. And how do you pronounce his last name?
Pagliocca. The G is silent, but you did pretty well.
Okay, thank you. And what's your Sheltie's name?
His name is Cole. He's a neurotic, but adorable little dog.
Sounds like my Linus as well. Well, anyway, again, we want to thank you for taking the time to be with us. And first of all, Diane, I want to find out a little bit about yourself. Have you always been interested in writing and reading?
I've been interested in writing ever since the first grade when our teacher read us Charlotte's Web chapter by chapter each day. And I would sit there in class crying and laughing, and it was so different from the little golden books that I had read prior to that. And it occurred to me that a human being actually wrote this story that could make me feel so many emotions. And I knew then that I wanted to be a writer. But when it came time to go to college and figure out what I wanted to do as a career, it never occurred to me that I could be a writer, that I could support myself as a writer. So I went into social work. I got my bachelor's and master's degree in social work and loved doing that work. I worked mostly in hospitals, and I also had a private practice with teenagers. But while I was working in the hospital, I had an idea for a story, and I had a doctor's appointment, and the doctor was very late, and I started writing the story, and he was 4 hours late. And the receptionist kept saying, "Don't you want to reschedule?" And I said, "No." I was just so deep into the story. And that's how my second career got started.
And this was private relations, is that correct?
It was private relations. This is way back in the early 80s. I started writing that book. And it was a big mess because I didn't know what I was doing. But I finally was able to get an agent and sell the book in 1986, but it wasn't actually published until 89. So that was the beginning.
So as far as you mentioned that you majored in social work in California, San Diego, the fact that you got your graduate and undergraduate degrees in social work, at some point did you take a class in creative writing? Because as we all know, academic writing is very different from creative writing.
Yeah. I did two things. My writing as a social worker in a hospital was very dry, as you can imagine, all facts in case notes, that kind of thing. So I went to a Jungian analyst to kind of tap into a different part of myself, my dreams, and just the more creative part of myself. And that actually was hugely, hugely helpful. The other thing that I did was I took a night class in writing the novel. And to be honest, at the time, I was viewing my writing as merely a hobby. But in this class, the very first night, the professor walked in and he said, "I assume you all want to be published." And it shifted my thinking to, gosh, maybe I could actually publish this thing. So it was just those two things that really helped turn me into a fiction writer.
One of the, I was reading one of the articles about you, and I forget, it must have been on your webpage, but it talks that a little bit about your favorite authors, combination of Victoria Holt and Sinclair Lewis. That's quite a difference there.
I know. That was all through my adolescence. Victoria Holt, I just love, and I still love, gothic stories where it's a little bit dark and sinister and you don't know what's going on. Hers are very romantic, but that's not necessarily what I love. It's the darkness. It's the mystery. But Sinclair Lewis, you know, we had to read I guess it was Arrowsmith or Main Street in high school. And I was probably the only student in class that just got really hooked on him and went to the library and got out all of his books. And I think the thing that made me love him so much and love his writing so much was his focus on social values. It was the mid-60s and mid to late 60s, and I was studying civil rights in my social studies class. And the high school that I went to in Plainfield, New Jersey, was about half black and half white. So it was every day I was seeing the social issues right in front of me. And the way he addressed them really resonated for me. So I always say that it's those two authors that really influence my writing, because most of my books do have some, it's subtle, but there's some focus on social issues, and there's also that gothic feel in most of them.
We are visiting with New York Times bestselling author Diane Chamberlain. The newest novel of hers is The Dream Daughter. Now, you mentioned Sinclair Lewis, and he, I guess, kind of resurfaced a couple of years ago when people started talking about it couldn't happen here, the presidential election of 2016.
You know, honestly, I wasn't aware of that, and I'm going to have to do some internet research, because that's really fascinating. I recently reread one of his books that was my favorite. The writing is so different from what you would see today in a novel, and yet I just enjoyed revisiting him. And it was King's Blood Royal, which is a book about a white man, who discovers that he is 1/32nd African-American, and how that changes his sense of self and how he explores the black culture in the area where he lives. And I just found, I remember being so fascinated by that story as a teenager, and I still find it fascinating today to look at what it was like for this man and his emotional growth as he moves through the story.
I haven't read that, so that's going to have to be next on my reading list. And my wife will probably say, another book? Okay. Yes. You mentioned, and we both talked a little bit about your graduate and undergraduate degrees and social work and working in that area. So did your background in those areas kind of stir you in the direction of because I think a lot of the books that you've written feel and deal a lot with domestic issues.
Yes, they do. I'm most interested in family dynamics and relationships between people. And so, of course, my social work degrees and experience comes in there. Sometimes I have social worker characters, particularly in Necessary Lies, which is one of my recent books, where it's about the eugenics program in North Carolina in the 40s and 50s. And there was also a very active eugenics program in California during that time. But I wanted to write that story from both a point of power and a point of powerlessness. So the two characters are a social worker who is told to have this young girl sterilized, and then the point of view of the young 15-year-old girl who wants to eventually have a family. So my social work background has informed my characters in that way, in terms of creating social work characters, but also just giving me that understanding of how people tick, what makes people tick, and the relationships between people, and also how you change one little thing in, let's say, a family system, and then the entire system changes. And I've discovered that with writing novels, that is really true of the entire novel. If you change one little tiny thing in a novel, you've got to change everything to fit in with that change that you made.
I guess that's a great lead-in to your current book, The Dream Daughter. And first of all, let me tell you, I got hooked on you not on phonics, on you when I read The Midwife's Confession. And, of course, after that, The Good Father and so on and so on. But
oh, well, thank you.
This book right away captured my attention because The Beatles and Ticket to Ride, because I love The Beatles. And when you talk about that in the first few pages, I'm going, wow, I got to continue reading this. Tell us about the idea for this, because this is a very different book.
It is. It is my 26th novel, and it is different in that it has a time travel element to it. My United Kingdom editor says it's different, but it's still vintage Diane Chamberlain. So my hope is, and it seems to be happening, that my longtime readers will take a risk and come along with me. Even if they are not fans of time travel, they seem to be loving this book. The inspiration came from when I was a social worker in San Diego in a maternity unit. And this is back in the early 80s. And I would see, excuse me, I'm losing my voice. I've been talking so much. I would see babies who were born back then who were too small or too sick to survive. But today, with the medical advances, they could survive. So over the years, I thought about these babies, and I just came up with this idea maybe about 10 years ago of what if a young woman in 1970 discovers she's pregnant and that her baby has a fatal condition, but there is some way that she could travel to the future to have that baby treated and then take the baby back home with her to 1970. And that idea just was constant in my mind. Every time I it was time to start a new book, I would think of that one. And my agent really was not happy with the idea of me writing that book because it was so different. She was afraid I would lose my audience. But finally, I was able to convince her, and my editor was very enthusiastic about it. So that's how The Dream Daughter came to be.
And as far as the book itself, as you mentioned, it's involving time travel. How difficult was it to kind of stay in sync with, because perhaps, you know, one day you're writing something about 1970 and then all of a sudden you're writing about the future. Mm-hmm. That probably was a little bit tricky.
It was definitely tricky, but it was also so much fun. It was mind-bending. And What I found is that as I was writing, more ideas would come to me. For example, in 1970, Carly, our protagonist, learns from her brother-in-law that he is from the future and he can help her get there. And of course, she doesn't believe him. And then it occurred to me that it's 1970 and it's May. It's early May, and I thought of a way that he could convince her. And the way he does it is he tells her that in a few days, the National Guard is going to kill 4 students at Kent State. And then when it happens, she, of course, has to believe him that he actually is from the future. So it was these little coincidences that would happen as I was writing that gave more of more interest to the story, I think. But to answer your question on how tricky it became, I had all these charts and calendars and resources telling me what was happening in the world in the different dates that we're visiting.
As far as Carly, the protagonist, sometimes she herself in the book catches herself because she says, oh, I'm supposed to know this and I don't know it. What's wrong with me?
Right. I mean, when she goes to 2001, she tries to educate herself by watching CNN. And she, you know, she hears about Obamacare and she has no idea what Obamacare is. So she has to lay low a little bit to not show her ignorance. She doesn't know what a microwave oven is. It's really fun to write. One of my favorite parts is that when she turns on the TV, she discovers that her favorite soap opera from 1970 is still on. And not only is it still on, but three or four of the characters are still played by the same actors from 30 years earlier. And so it was things like that that made this book fun for me to write.
I think what caught me as well, too, is when you think of the technology and everything that Cardi sees in the future, and then you take yourself back to where she originally came from, you're going, my gosh, how did we ever exist without this? Or how did we do this? Kind of like today, we see just about everybody on their cell phone, everybody's texting instead of talking, and you're going, wow, you know, this was not available maybe even five, 10 years ago.
It did make me wonder what it would be like for her after living so long in the future to go back to having no cell phone, to having no microwave. But really, again, it's all about family, and that's what really was driving her. And that's what really was driving her brother-in-law, too, why he was from the future and why would he want to stay in 1970. And it's love and family and the peace and quiet that draws him to that era.
We want to stress that even though it is dealing with time travel, this is not a, by any means, what some people would call a science fiction book, because some people might say, oh, time travel, this is, you know, Star Trek, this is Star Wars, whatever. It's nothing like that. It's,
right,
as you mentioned, very much to do with families and the fact that feelings, emotions, parenting doesn't change because it's a different era. You still have that love for that child. And what I couldn't imagine was what Cardi was going through as she saw her daughter.
Yeah. And we don't want to give too much away. But her baby does have the surgery that it needs, that she needs. And Carly spends a lot of time with her in the neonatal intensive care unit. And the question there is, how far will you go to save your child's life? And then there are a lot of other decisions, as you know, that she has to make along the way. But that's really the crux of it. Book clubs will have a field day with this book, because could you do what Carly did in order to save your child's life? I'm honestly not sure I could do it, but I hope I could.
We are visiting with New York Times bestselling author Diane Chamberlain. Her latest novel is The Dream Daughter. And if you haven't read any of Diane's former previous books, this is her 26th novel. There are plenty of them out there. And another one that has gotten a lot of attention in the past is The Silent Sister.
Yes, The Silent Sister was really one of my best sellers. And it is set in a small town in North Carolina, New Bern, North Carolina. And it's about a young woman who comes home to clean out her father's house after her father's death. And she has always been told that her older sister killed herself. And as she's cleaning out her father's house, she begins to doubt that that's the truth. So it's a very suspenseful story and really different from my other books. You know, none of my books, as you know, since you've read some of them, they're not the same. Sometimes I wish that I could write books that were more alike, so it would make it easier on me. But the ideas that come to me are always so different from whatever the previous book was. So this story has a lot of suspense and a lot of mystery in it. And I think that's one thing that made it so popular.
But I guess, Diane, what you just mentioned, the fact that your books are not alike, is what makes them special. Because sometimes as an author, whether you're an author, a singer, an actor, you can be pigeonholed. And all of a sudden people just say, oh, that person is a Western writer. That person is a mystery writer. And if you write something different, it's sometimes not accepted well.
Yeah, you know, that's always been a problem in my career right from the start, because my books never fit neatly into any category. Early on, there was usually a romantic element, so bookstores and reviewers would try to pigeonhole them as romances, but they really were not. So then it was, are they general fiction? Are they women's fiction? Are they suspense? And that actually was problematic for, I would say, the first 10 years of my career, because if they can't put you someplace, if they can't pigeonhole you, then it makes it much harder to describe what this book is about. And so I think now people are just accustomed to my books being different from one another. So it makes it, they just are more accepting of it. It's still really hard to pigeonhole them, though. It's hard to say it's this type of book. What I usually say is my books have mystery and suspense, and they're 100% family drama. And that pretty much sums it up, I think.
With the way technology changes every day, in fact, even by next year, next month, things might be different. But social media has changed the way we read. There are now Audible books around. There's Kindles, smartphones, tablets. But Audible, I've always been a fan of audiobooks because I've always loved old-time radio dramas. And it seems like the audiobooks have changed to become more like radio dramas because you have people who are not just reading them but acting them, telling you the story. How difficult was it for you to adapt to this, to find a good reader for your books and to also decide what it makes good audio and what doesn't?
Well, it's not up to me to find the narrator. So my publisher takes care of finding the narrator. And I think they've done an amazing job in the narrators that they've picked. The Dream Daughters, narrated by Susan Bennett, and she's phenomenal. And you're absolutely right. It's become much more of a production, much more of a, almost you're listening to a play, in that she takes on the voice of whoever she's narrating. She gets her accents right. And it's amazing to me to listen to her tell my story. So I think the fact that audiobooks are becoming so popular, and it really seems to have happened almost overnight. So many of my readers are reading through audiobooks. And I love that. I love that there's so many different ways that we can access books.
And there are ways that people also will download a book to listen to it on their commute. Sometimes they'll listen to it while on a trip. And then sometimes they'll read it, they'll download it, but then they'll also have it on their Kindle, on their tablet. And then if you're old school, you also want to have that book to hold in your hand.
You've been watching what I do, I think. I often will have the Kindle edition, the hardcover edition, and the Audible edition of a book, so that I've got it everywhere. And that runs into a lot of money, but I just really like the having the physical book on my shelf, but I love reading on my iPad, and I love listening in the car. So I just switch back and forth.
What does Diane Chamberlain like to read, or what is the last book or book you're currently reading?
Well, I very often am reading advanced reading copies that editors will send me in the hope that I'll give a blurb. And the one that I just spies that went into Paris during World War II. And it's just excellent. She is a wonderful writer. And right now I am reading Kate Morton's The Clockmaker's Daughter. Kate and I are going to be interviewed together at the Morristown Book Festival here in New Jersey this weekend. So I wanted to read this book, and it's wonderful. It's Kate Morton is a wonderful writer, and we both have some supernatural elements in our current book. So I think it'll be a fun interview.
And again, what you just mentioned, you've gotten some rave reviews advance about The Dream Daughter, as you have with some of your other books. And so a lot of times, as you mentioned earlier, there are book clubs available. So These kind of books make it a little bit more interesting to join a book club and become a member of a book club, because it's not something like we did in high school where it was a sign reading and you had to do it. And sometimes we didn't like the books they chose for us.
Right. Well, and most book clubs these days involve socializing and food and drink. And so it makes it so much more fun than just sitting and talking about the book. Although my local book club, we really do get into talking about the book, which I appreciate. And I Skype with a lot of book clubs around the country and occasionally around the world, where I call them or they call me and we Skype together so I can see them. And I can see the food they've made and what they're drinking, and they can see me, and we talk about the books that way. And that's really, it's a lot of fun for them and for me. I highly recommend book clubs. They're just such a treat.
Before we leave, if you wouldn't mind giving us perhaps your Facebook page or a web page that people can go to find out more about you and your books?
Sure. www.DianeChamberlain.com is my website, and my events are all listed there, as well as there's a printable book list that helps readers keep track of what they've read and what they haven't read. And on Facebook, it's Diane Chamberlain Readers page, and I love interacting with my Facebook readers. So there's a lot of them there, and we really have a good time. I try to do contests. And also my readers help me with character names and all sorts of things. So we really have some fun there.
Well, Diane, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today. We really enjoyed having this conversation with you. Diane Chamberlain, New York Times bestselling author, her most recent book, The Dream Daughter. Diane, again, thank you for being with us.
And thank you so much for a wonderful interview.
The Book Club on Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to The Book Club. I'm Louis Sines.